Blog Talk Radio.
Former Blackhawk, local guy, and the current color analyst for the Blackhawks on television, it is Eddie Olczyk.
The guy's an asshole. Dead air moments. Paid out the rectum.
Well, first of all, we're very, very happy with Dennis Savard as our head coach. He's growing.
What the fuck does that mean? I don't know how long you guys got, but I can sit. I'll sit here till 4 in the morning and explain to you why James Wisniewski sucks.
You're never surprised by anything.
We're men, okay? That means a few things. We like to shit with the door open. We talk about pussy. We go on riverboat gambling trips. We make our own beef jerky. That's what we do.
What is slashing?
Slashing is like death, you know?
Mm-hmm. And there's a penalty for that?
Yeah. And for a trip also, you know,
oh.
Like that. And
mm-hmm.
For hook, like this. And for spear, you know, like that.
Mm-hmm.
All bad.
Bad.
You do that, you go to the box, you know, 2 minutes by yourself, and you feel shame, you know,
mm-hmm.
And then you get free.
Stupid. Such a fine line between stupid and clever.
All right, Superstar, how are you doing tonight?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Now, let's get right into it, Superstar. Now, I don't imagine that you went back and listened to last week's show.
No, I did not.
For those of you who weren't with us, and I can't imagine that it's many of you, but for those of you that weren't with us last week on the show, Superstar, why don't you tell the story?
Well, you know, Superstar decided to take in a Cubs National Day game.
After your doctor's appointment.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. On a rooftop across the street from Wrigley Field, and if anybody's ever been on a rooftop, knows it can get out of hand pretty quickly. Drinks are kind of readily available for free. And, you know, the Superstar likes to partake every once in a while.
Well, I guess everybody knows that now.
Well, yeah, they do. If they didn't know before, they definitely know now.
Yeah, it was quite an adventure last week, and the reaction to it was, I think, overly and thankfully, I mean, I don't know what to make of the reaction to it other than it wasn't negative. But we'll see how many of those people return this week. It is The Third Man In Radio here on blogtalkradio.com/The Third Man In, and also simulcast, well, it's not simulcasting. So we got to talk about thethirdmanin.com in a minute, too. At thethirdmanin.com, I am Chris Block, the writer, editor, and all points in between the guy that the guy behind the guy, the only guy at thethirdmanin.com on this Wednesday.
It is a Wednesday.
I don't know what day it is. Wednesday, Cinco de Mayo, May 5th, 2010. It is 6:34. It's an early show. Here in Chicago, and alongside, of course, it is the aforementioned Superstar, and we know how you're doing. Superstar, I watched a movie over the weekend. I'd like to tell you about it.
Really? What movie did you watch?
It was Julie and Julia.
Ah, okay.
Now, have you ever seen this movie?
I have not.
Okay, well, let me just quick backstory. The two main actresses in the movie are Amy Adams. Well, I'm a big fan, and of course you as well.
I am.
We got Pootie Tang in the house tonight.
And Meryl Streep, who is is wildly regarded as is the greatest female actress of all time. Is she not?
She is widely and highly respected, yes.
Make him humble.
Well, I mean, she was terrific in the movie, and Amy Adams is terrific anytime she's on screen, as far as I'm concerned. But what I want to get to is, it's a decent movie. I'm easily entertained. I don't know if it was a good movie or it wasn't a good movie. It doesn't really matter. The point is, there's a thing in there. There's a line in there, because the backstory behind this, for those of you who don't know, it's a true story of a woman who was going nowhere in her life, post 9/11, was working at some hotline, center for people that were coping with the after effects of 9/11 and whatever. But she's going nowhere in her life, so she decides to start a blog. And this is back in like 2002 when the story actually took place. So blogging in 2002 was just starting to get going, and she took the Julia, what's her name?
I don't even know. Julia.
Julia Child. Julia Child's cookbook, and yes. she's gonna cook up 500 some recipes in 365 days or something. That's what I got out of it. I don't know. But there's a line in there about how bloggers now, and I hate that. We don't need to rehash my whole problem with the blogger thing. I mean, there's a lot of people who do blog because they just go on and they basically masturbate on the keyboard. There's a lot of blogs that do that. If you write and you put your time into it and it's thoughtful and there's a beginning, there's a middle and there's an end, you're a writer. I don't think you have to be published to be a writer. If you write and it's somewhat coherent, you're a writer. That's what it is. But if people want to be, they're okay with being called bloggers, then that's fine. I'm not going to. But the thing in there is that bloggers, there's a line in there about bloggers are self-indulgent, narcissistic, and whatever. And I thought about that for a minute because, I've been accused of all three. And vapid, I think, is another term they used. Vulgar, all that kind of stuff. I've been accused of all those things, have I not?
You have, on more than one occasion.
And I probably will again before the night's over. But I thought about that for a while, and I don't know that I could disagree with it. Because most bloggers, even here locally, are just desperate for attention.
Agreed.
And if you want to say that this show is desperate for attention, you would be dead wrong, because I don't really give a damn. I'm just trying to keep Superstar out of the bars. That's really all I'm doing.
You're failing. Epic fail on your part.
I know, because I'm contributing to a lot of it as well.
You most certainly do.
All right, so we got to get going here. I actually, now, game three tonight, just in about basically 2 hours now from puck drop, the Blackhawks tied 1-1 with the Vancouver Canucks. Going into General Motors Place and in Vancouver tonight. Ooh, I don't know about you, Superstar, but I expect this to be one of the games for the ages. Just the way the first two games at the United Center shook out, the fact that the Blackhawks really haven't impressed me too much in this series, and going back west, not as much pressure on them as playing in front of their own, their own crowd. Vancouver's got a lot of confidence in this series. I think they felt like they kind of sat on that lead in the second and third period and basically committed the sin that they committed last year at the United Center, specifically in Game 4 of the 2009 Western Conference semifinals in which they got a lead and they just stopped playing offense. And the problem when you stop playing offense against the Blackhawks is you give them the puck and it allows them to, you know, start building momentum. And the more momentum the Blackhawks get, I mean, they're just too talented up front and on the back end to not score goals. And to me, Vancouver conceded. I mean, they may have lost in the end anyway. But the way Roberto Luongo was playing, they conceded that game to the Blackhawks. So I think that Vancouver's coming in with ultimate confidence. I think the Blackhawks are coming in with a lot of confidence, feeling that they were nervous and they were clearly shaken in game one. Basically the same thing happened to them in game two, even quicker. And they turned around, they settled down, and they came back and won that game. I think both teams are coming in with an incredible amount of confidence. I do expect this to be back and forth all night long, and it's going to be a battle of whose goalie is better, in my opinion. We could see – I wouldn't be surprised to see overtime tonight, but I just expect to see one of those games that it's going to take you a day or two to recover from, just how physical, how exciting back and forth, just amazing scoring chances, amazing goaltending, and probably some really dumb plays, too, leading to goals and probably a game-winning goal. And I expect just a fantastic game, specifically because I will be playing hockey during pretty much all of it. So I'll hear all about it, and then I'll have to watch it later.
Yeah, well, between you predicting that and you missing the game, this is like a 6-0 clunker written all over it.
I remember last May when this series was going on, I forget, the Blackhawks, it was the game the Blackhawks got down and they came back, and it was really the game that Bufflin started to get it, and he was all over Luongo's case in that game, I remember. Dave Bolin had a great night that night. I was at the rink that night, and I caught the very end of it. I think the third period I caught of it. But, I mean, let's get into talking about the first two games. Now, of course, on Saturday night, a lot of misconceptions about that game, I think, that, you saw Saturday night and Monday night as well, I would hope.
Yes.
Okay. Sometimes superstar, you know, he comes to the show and I didn't see that game, but I'll talk about it. But you did see it.
I did see it.
Okay. What were your impressions of Saturday night, first of all? Let's get that one out of the way.
You know, Saturday, regardless of the score, they didn't play inspired hockey. They made a lot of mistakes that led to goals. I don't think Saturday was so much what Vancouver did, as much as you can say Vancouver forced them into the turnover, and Vancouver did this and did that. I think it was more the Hawks kind of beating themselves. And kind of it went from 1-3 pretty quickly, if I remember right. And at that point, it was, well, we're done. It was not a team that played with any sort of emotion, any sort of confidence. And I think that changed a lot on Monday night.
Well, back to Saturday night. Clearly in that first period, the Blackhawks were taking it to Vancouver, and Vancouver was keeping the pace, which was, I think, something that surprised the Blackhawks, and I don't know why it did. We talked about last week going back to that January 23rd game out in Vancouver when the Blackhawks 5-on-5 were absolutely owned by the Vancouver Canucks, and we're talking about going back to Saturday night. The first three goals that Vancouver scored were all even-strength goals. And it seemed that every mistake the Blackhawks made, like you said, went into the back of their net. Now, the first goal, the Christian Eroff goal, where he just sort of threw a wrist shot far side, and it beat Niemi up top. Niemi, of course, down to his knees immediately, giving up the entire top portion of the net. Plus, he couldn't see Eroff. So he had Burrows and Sharp in front of him. But his angle was completely off, and he was down on his knees. So Eroff just saw what Niemi was giving him, and he threw it to the area that he saw was available, and it went right in. That was a Niemi goal. The second one, the Mason Raymond goal, was the one where Sopel was out of position, and or no, excuse me. No, that was the first one. The first one was the Sopel and Kopechki pinching down, and the puck goes back up to Ehrhoff, and he throws it down. The Mason Raymond goal was the one where Boland and Versteeg left Mason Raymond all alone on that humongous Niemi rebound. And, you know, again, I mean, that's a mental mistake. You had three Blackhawks forwards on the left side of the ice. The puck goes to the right side where Mason Raymond's coming down, and, you know, an improbable 45, 50-foot rebound goes on Mason Raymond's stick, and he just easily puts it right back into the net. 2-0. The Blackhawks, I mean, I don't know how many games teams win, you know, and this is a stat for TSN or somebody to go and find. How many times does a team win when in any two periods they give up the last goal or a goal in the last minute of a period, and then they come right back out and give up a goal in the first minute of the following period? It can't be very many games. And when that happened, I mean, not only did the air just completely let out of the United Center, but you could see that the Blackhawks knew the game was over. And, I mean, they were playing itchy and scratchy, and I mean, they were fumbling the puck and turnovers and everything. Before that, it was really after the Ehrhoff goal that they got really twitchy and nervous, and they were playing Saturday night, the Blackhawks, up and down the lineup. Every single guy was playing like a guy who was dressing in his first preseason game in September. That's how clumsy and just out of sync these guys were. And in the third period, the referees start giving Vancouver some penalties. The Blackhawks get some time on the power play. It took a 5-on-3 for them to finally beat Roberto Luongo. And, you know, I think that, you know, some people took, you know, I mean, from Joe Quenneville and the Blackhawks standpoint, as a coach, of course you're going to take something positive out of that third period. To me, that third period meant absolutely nothing. And it obviously did, because come forth the Monday night, the first 5 minutes of the game, Vancouver just absolutely owned the Blackhawks. I mean, they had no concern whatsoever about the Blackhawks. Defensemen pinching up into the play. Vancouver getting the puck down low and cycling, working it around, outmanning the Blackhawks down low. It was everything that game one was, with the Blackhawks not getting to the pucks, not, you know, winning those physical battles, not willing to give forth that extra playoff effort to gain possession and own possession. So, from that point, it was really. And we'll talk about the guy. Brent Seabrook had just an absolutely monster Monday night. It wasn't perfect night for him, but the goal that he scored 2 minutes after the Samuelson power play goal was enormous in getting the Blackhawks back into the game, because that was really the goal, the one where he pinched down low and the Boland pass that was intended for Ladd right on the doorstep. It sneaks through, and Seabrook read the play and saw that all the space was there for him to pinch. He didn't have to worry about getting caught. He pinches down. The puck just comes to him. You know, and if it hits Ladd's stick, then Ladd tries a stuff attempt, and Seabrook's still there for the rebound. So it was a perfect read by Seabrook. And it was on his off point, too, because he was coming from the left-hand side. But he still makes the read. He comes down. That goal is what kicked the Blackhawks back into the game. But not only that, it was the Blackhawks' fortune in the shift after the Mason Raymond goal, 1:22 into the game. Kevin Bieksa pinches down, and he's right in front of Antti Niemi. He tries a stuff attempt. And then he gets the puck right back. He lifts it over Niemi, who's sprawled out flat on the ground, and he hits crossbar, or if it was crossbar or post, one or the other. That makes it 2-0. And if Samuelson's power play goal makes it 3-0, because if you got to remember, that was a 5-on-3 with both Seabrook and Halmerson in the box, I don't think the Blackhawks win that game. So it was those two plays. It was Seabrook, or excuse me, Bieksa hitting the post. That would have made it 2-0. That would have made Samuelson goal 3-0, and then Seabrook getting that goal right back. So it kind of, with basically 54 minutes left in the game, 55 minutes left in the game, or excuse me, when Seabrook scored, there was probably, what, 52 minutes left in the game. But, I mean, getting the deficit back to one, it sort of erased that bad start. And I know that the Blackhawks chalked it up to being too intent or too, you know, pumped up to erase what happened on Saturday night. But the fact is, Vancouver now, two games in a row, has done this to the Blackhawks. They've come out and they've out-hustled them. They've out, you know, outworked them, and they've outskated them. And, you know, going forward to Vancouver now, you have to be even more concerned about that, because now Alain Vigneault is the one getting his matchups. And to me, I have no confidence at all. If you listen to the show, I have been on this guy's case for 3 or 4 months. I have no confidence at all in Joel Quenneville right now. So that's an important thing to watch. How much, and we should probably talk about it now.
Well, you know what? I wanted to touch on something that you brought up, and that was the Duncan Keith and who was the other penalty that gave Vancouver the 5-on-3? It was Duncan Keith.
On Monday, or no, it was Halmerson with the delay of the game over the glass. And I should say this, because I've read where people, and I only predominantly have only read Chicago slanted view on this, but people who thought that Brent Seabrook delay a game penalty, which, I mean, it's another Brent Seabrook play, another thing that turned the tide in that on that the initial power play with Halmerson shooting the puck over the glass, the Sedins are down low working the puck. They had a golden opportunity to stuff that puck in. Seabrook comes down and actually helps make a save, and then he disguised it very well. But there is no question, if you go back and watch that replay, he knocked that net off intentionally. I remember in the last series, Phoenix, Henrik Zetterberg did it perfectly. I believe it was in Game 6 at the Joe, where he disguised it perfectly. He came down, he made a play, and then he made off like his continuation made him take that puck or take the net off this morning. If you look, Brent Seabrook, not only could he have stopped, but he also brings up his right leg and his hand to push the net off this morning. It was an absolute blatant penalty. It was disguised well. He did a really good job, and he might have gotten away with it if a referee or a linesman isn't looking at her in the right position. But that was the 5-on-3. That was deserved. Seabrook needed to get a penalty for that because it was a total delay of game.
Right. Well, the point I wanted to make is you have two delay of game penalties, and give or take whatever situations they come in, you also took a too many men on the ice penalty. Those are 6 minutes of power play time, and in this case, almost a full, I have it right in front of me, the minute and a half of 5-on-3 time. You cannot be giving a team that's talented those kind of extra opportunities by mental mistakes. It will cost you, and it will cost you the series.
Right. I mean, the 5-on-3, they got caught on because Samuelson scores. Vancouver doesn't, you know... with the time left over on the Seabrook penalty, Vancouver doesn't get another one. Ben Eager should be benched tonight for that too many men. I mean, that was about as absent-minded of a too many men infraction as you can get. When you call your guy off, or when you're calling the other guy on and you wave to him, you've got to go. You've got to get off the ice, especially when you're 5 feet from the bench. Because that other guy's going to jump, and if you have to turn and look and see that the puck is coming towards you, if you've already called the other guy, you have to leap for the bench to get off. Because when you call the other guy and you're 5 feet from the bench, especially in the playoffs and how intense it is, you got to know that your guy is coming. And if he's on the ice at all and you turn and you touch the puck or you're anywhere near the puck, that's too many men. Ben Eager should not play tonight, specifically because of that. Because, to me, the Blackhawks are lucky that, too many men calls are typically the ones, especially in the playoffs, are typically the ones that you get burned on. And that late in the third period, when it was still a one-goal game, it was still a tie game at the time. That could be the game. And I don't think he'll get benched. I expect. We should talk a little bit about Troy Brouwer, and the fact that he only played 5.5 minutes the other night. Now, why don't you? Since he's been back, now of course it's not a great story, and you kind of don't want to harp on the guy because he left the team for a week at the end of the season to go be with his ill father, and then he came back and he had sort of lost his spot on the top lines. He spent some time on the fourth line, and he got back up there in recent games, but didn't play very much at all on Monday night in Game 2. What has been your sort of observation of Brouwer and his play?
Well, I think he's been absent. I really do. I mean, I obviously going through a family issues that are that large is not easy to do for anybody, but he's a professional. He needs to kind of almost use the ice as a sanctuary to get, kind of get out there, clear his head of everything else that's going on and try to do something. I thought Quinville made the right choice as far as putting him back on that top line to try to get him going, try to get him involved. It wasn't there. There's nothing there right now.
There's a misconception about, first of all, Troy Brouwer's hurt. All right, but there's a misconception about his play on. His first two shifts on Monday night were rough shifts. The Mason Raymond goal, when he left the left point, and he left Bieksa all alone to get that shot on goal. Kessler's on the doorstep. It's not completely his fault that goal was scored. Bieksa maybe still gets a wrist shot through if Brouwer's over there, but he should have been over on the left side covering that side where Kevin Bieksa was. That's a mistake. And then, I didn't get to – I wasn't at the game. I'll talk about that in a minute, but I wasn't at the game on Monday night. But Pat Foley made a big deal on his next shift about the fact that he missed, there was a big stretch pass, and, he just missed that and it went for icing. But actually his last shift of the first period, pretty much his last shift of the first period with Taves and Kane, was his best shift in a long time. With a big hit, a keep-in, a really nice shot on goal that was timed well with Taves going to the net. He got knocked on his ass at one point, but he got right back up into the play. It was a very strong shift by that line and Brouwer in particular. Now, his very next shift, and I haven't seen anybody who said this or read it or whatever, and I don't know why people who claim to be really smart about this kind of stuff didn't see it. But on the penalty kill with Seabrook and Homerson in the box, or no, excuse me, the stupid penalty that Versteeg took I got the score sheet in front of me. The tripping call that Versteeg took at 10:26 of the first period. Brouwer's out on the PK right after that, and he blocks a shot, and it went off of his leg. Brouwer didn't play much at all after that. He tried to, he came out and he tried two shifts after that. He came right off the ice. He had one shift in the second period, but after that he never played again. That's the reason why he was benched on he was hurt. So, there was nothing. Brouwer did nothing in his last shifts that, that warranted the benching. So, but unless he's better and can play tonight, I do expect him, because Bufflin's got they lined up Bufflin again. Now, again, this is Joel Quenneville, right? He lines up Dustin Bufflin on defense in the second round of the playoffs when he already, abandoned that experiment in the first round against Nashville. If it's not going to work against Nashville, and you're creeped out about the idea of what the Nashville Predators forwards are going to do to Dustin Bufflin, then why would you think it's a good idea in round two against the Vancouver Canucks? It lasted all
I
of
don't.
About, it lasts all of about two shifts, and then the Blackhawks are playing the rest of the game with five defensemen. Again, against the Vancouver Canucks. So it's obvious somebody's coming out tonight. It's either going to be Eager or Brouwer. I don't know. I would expect that it's going to be Brouwer because Bufflin's going to play on the top lines. So Brouwer comes out. Jordan Hendry goes back in. But I didn't think that Brouwer played bad at all in the time that he was out there on Monday night. He just got hurt. And then when Bufflin moved up to the top lines, it's sort of, you know, you're not playing your fourth line, and it's just, I think he was just the odd man out. Plus, he was nicked up. So, I don't know. I haven't been overly impressed with Troy Brouwer, but I don't think he's been nearly as bad as certain people have been claiming that he's been. But you would like him to score or get involved offensively, like he was on that one shift that I talked about in the first period. All right, Brent Seabrook, 8 hits, the big goal in the first period to cut the lead to 2-1, and just an all-around awesome game by Brent Seabrook, the second star on Monday night. For some reason, Chris Versteeg, and this is just, The official score sheet just says 3 stars picked by the Chicago media. Now, this doesn't make the Chicago media look good at all, because Chris Versteeg was probably the worst Hawk on the ice on Monday night.
Agreed.
My God. Even on the goal, the game-winning goal, he passed up the goal. All he had to do is pull to his backhand, and he didn't even have to lift it off the ice, it would have went in. Instead, he tries to shovel the puck, pass it through traffic, and it finds its way back to him, and then he gets a second chance, and then he roofs it.
It was still a great shot. The game winner. It didn't need to be.
It just came 3 or 4 seconds later than it should have been.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, he's lucky that it even came back to him. Because if that puck deadens out in traffic there, it either gets cleared or it gets covered. You know, and you're headed to overtime. So, I mean, great. He scored the goal. It's like Marian Hossa in Game 5 against Nashville. It's like, great, you came out of the box, you scored the goal, but you shouldn't even have been in the game. You know, and it's his fault that he shouldn't have been in the game. Dave Bolin, that goal that he scored against, one of the games against Nashville, the only goal Dave Bolin scored. It's like he's all alone. There's nobody around him for miles. He gets the puck. He's able to fiddle with it, put it on his back end, and then shovel it into an empty net. It's like, well, good for you, Dave Bolin. But where have you been otherwise? Decent game the other night. To be fair, and I ripped both guys in the Committed Indian on Monday night, but to be fair, we saw signs of life, moderate signs of life from Dave Bolin and Marian Hossa on Monday night. So those are good things going into tonight's game in Vancouver.
Yeah, and the one thing, while we're on the verse on Chris Versteeg, on Sharp's shorthanded 2-on-1, if he passed to Chris Versteeg, I was going to cab it to the United Center and punch Patrick Sharp in the face. I don't want Chris Versteeg with the puck ever. I don't want him without the puck.
Remember the first shift of the game, the linesman missed I haven't gone back and looked at it, but I mean the linesman missed an offside call that should have been an offside call caused by Versteeg screwing around, and then the next rush they were called for offside. He's so frustrating to watch because he's so dumb, and there's no hope for him. He's got a lot of skill, but he's. That tripping call, in the first period when you're building momentum and he takes that again. I mean, that's another thing. It was a stupid penalty where he sprawls and and he trips the Vancouver player, and Vancouver scores there. It's again, it's 3-1. I mean, it's just a stupid penalty, and that's my thing with him and Boland. If you go back to last year's playoffs, it's just a stupid penalty, and they're guys that just aren't likable, you know.
Yeah, and if you remember right before the tripping penalty, he gave the puck away.
Yeah,
another Christopher Sieg turnover. Shocking.
Well, check the score sheet. I mean, he was charged with one giveaway. One giveaway.
Okay.
He did lead the Blackhawks in attempts blocked, though. So shooting attempts blocked, once again, Christopher Sieg leads the Blackhawks. 4 to Dustin Byfuglien's 3. So two guys that hockey IQ isn't very high, and they're proving it there again. Marian Hossa, though, I want to talk about game one. He skates 17 minutes, 45 seconds, 421 of that on the power play. And the Blackhawks were actually very successful on the power play on Saturday in game one. They got a lot of shots to the net, a ton of chances. Okay, game one, Marian Hossa, no shots. Invisible player on Monday night. When he got the puck, he was as guilty as any Blackhawk, getting the puck, just being nervous, losing it, mishandling it, you know, many, many times. Game two, a lot different Marian Hossa. Didn't get a goal or anything, but, and you know, not even a point, but he did get six shots on goal, a little over 17 minutes of playing time. Blackhawks only had two power plays, so he only skated a minute 15 on the power play out of 4 minutes. So that's a little surprising, but a much better game, more purpose, getting some air underneath the shots, which is something that if you've been watching Hossa all year long very closely, is something that he doesn't do quite often. A lot of his shots are low to the ice. I've seen a lot of Marian Hossa's career, and I think that I can't help but think that shoulder is still an issue. Because a lot of his shots, and it's ever since he came back, a lot of his shots are very low to the ground. And not necessarily on the ice, you know, trying to beat a goalie along the ice. I mean, we're talking maybe a foot and a half, you know, off the ice. I mean, you know, you're talking about not great, angles to be coming in to beat a goalie on. But he had a lot of good chances in game two, and hopefully that continues, because they need Marian Hossa to get going here. Otherwise, I mean, I've picked the Blackhawks in 7. I think you picked them in 6. Did you not?
I did.
Yeah. We got to go over our picks.
Yeah, we're pretty screwed.
If you were with us back a few weeks ago, right before, actually the night that the playoffs started, a couple of our picks were, game ones were already in the books while we were making them, but it didn't matter. We didn't. It does appear now, of course, my Stanley Cup champion was lost last week, and it does appear now that your Stanley Cup champion is days away from extinction.
Yeah, my Stanley Cup champion, the Detroit Red Wings, really, they don't want to play a full 60 minutes, so the San Jose Sharks will take care of them pretty quickly here, I assume, so.
I made the comparison in the Indian, or I tried to anyway, of comparing Marian Hossa, or at least asking the question, at what point do we tag Marian Hossa with the Joe Thornton playoff tag? And, of course, Joe Thornton responded. I mean, Marian Hossa, like we said, had a good game two. But Joe Thornton also responded by having a huge third period. A totally different Joe Thornton in that third period last night at the Joe in game three. Of course, in case you haven't heard, and I don't know where you've been if you haven't, but San Jose up 3-0 on the Detroit Red Wings. And, yes, I mean, the last time the Red Wings were swept in the playoffs, you have to go back to 2003, the opening round against Anaheim. Now, that was the year after the Red Wings won that 2002 Cup. And they come back in the first round. They get swept by the Ducks. Of course, the Ducks in 2003 went on to play New Jersey in a seven-game Stanley Cup Finals, losing that 4-3 to the Devils. But yeah, you got to go all the way back to 2003. And it's not like the Red Wings have missed any playoffs. They played a ton in the playoffs, and they have not been swept since 2003. I mean, going back to before that, I mean, the only time they lost four straight in a series period before that was, God, I remember this series actually vividly because it involved my guy Adam Deadmarsh. But 2001, they were up 2-0 on the L.A. Kings in the again in the opening round. And then they go back, they go out to L.A., they lose two straight, go back to the Joe, lose again, and then in Game 6, in L.A., Adam Deadmarsh scores in overtime and knocks out the Detroit Red Wings in that series. But, gosh, I mean, it's pretty crazy. I expected San Jose to win this series, and I think I picked it in I got it right from me in six games. But the Red Wings have got a – they've got a lot to work on in order to get two wins out of this series.
Yeah, they're done. So that makes both of our Stanley Cup champions outy in the first two rounds.
Yeah, let's go over it real quick. For those that you may want to turn off the show right now if you're expecting hockey geniusness, because well, first I'll go over superstars. I documented this stuff.
Oh, good.
You had San Jose over the Abs in five. You're one off there. We both had the Blackhawks in six over Nashville. You had Vancouver in five. I had them in seven. We split the difference. You picked the Red Wings in seven over Phoenix. I had the Red Wings winning that one in five, so you had it on the ball there. And of course, I picked San Jose in to sweep the Avalanche. If you listen to that show, I was going to pick five. Of course, I would have been wrong anyway. But then I was appalled by the fact that you wouldn't step up and call a sweep, so I did it myself and jinxed myself in game one.
Yeah, and if I remember right, that game was over pretty close to
the end of the show. Something like that. But yeah, and of course, my predictions for this round continue to be the Hawks in seven and San Jose in six. Doesn't look like that's going to happen now. You have Detroit in six. That ain't going to happen.
No, apparently not.
That one's impossible, and you also have the Hawks in six. Now, over in the East, we were really bad.
Well, I mean, you were a lot worse than me.
I was one worse. I was one worse than you.
That's a big one.
It wasn't a big one. We were both wrong on Washington.
We were.
Yeah, but you had Washington in five. I predicted seven. I predicted that the series was going to go exactly the way it did. I predicted that there'd be all this turmoil and Washington would have a hard time figuring out how to win games, to, you know, play as a team, and the Montreal power play would be on fire and all that stuff. I told you exactly how the series was going to go. Toot, toot. But it was just narcissistic and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I also thought that the Capitals would win Game 7 at home. That didn't happen. And there went my Stanley Cup champions. So instead now, I get to keep, well, since I only have one team in the East that did win in the first round, since I went chalk across the board in the East, Pittsburgh is now going to beat the Blackhawks in Game 6 at the United Center. If that's even possible. I think the Hawks would have home ice. So, Pittsburgh in Game 6 at the Igloo. A fitting end to the Igloo.
That would be a fitting end to the Igloo. Sorry, Block, I'm distracted for a second. I coming out of the East now, I would have to agree with you and say Pittsburgh comes out of the East.
Yeah, I don't see anybody else. I mean, Boston's playing real well right now. I mean, the game's on behind me, and they're losing. Or no, they're up 2-1. So, unless my – it's about time that I change my contacts, I think.
Yeah. No, it was 2-1 last I had it on as well. 2-1 Boston with 12 minutes to go in second period.
Okay. Thank you very much. But, yeah, I don't know. You got to give it to the Flyers and Brian Boucher for winning that first round, and the Devils again stink in the first round of the playoffs and choke. But I picked them, but to beat Philadelphia, picked Buffalo to beat Boston. That didn't work out either. But I did pick Pittsburgh in six, and that's the way that turned out. So it's the only team I got left. So that's the one I'm going for in the East. And so Pittsburgh and the Black, it's a nice consolation prize to what would have been a fantastic series, Chicago and the Caps.
Yeah, I think it would have been an amazing series as well. I didn't pick it, but I think it would have been an amazing series. So I was happy with my Flyers pick and saw that the trend was kind of there all year. And I don't know about this Boston-Philadelphia series, though. It seems like it's going to be a long one.
You know, we were talking about, just a side note, we were talking about Victor Hedman on last week's show when we were, I don't know if you remember this or not, but when we were going through our NHL awards, we were talking about Victor Hedman as part of the, I mentioned anyway that, don't forget about this guy because I don't think he was that far off the rest of the rookies. It was just the fact that he played in Tampa Bay. Well, as a weird note, superstar, and this will tell you how pathetic my life is and how much of a loser I am. I got the Tampa Bay Lightning season in review publication today.
Oh God!
And I was reading it, and there's a terrific picture of Zenon Konopka in here with his ear all bleeding, and I gotta hand it. I mean, for such a crappy organization, they do a great season in review publication. I mean, it's already out and everything.
Well, yeah, but when you can, start doing your season in review in November, it doesn't really say much.
Steven Stamkos is quoted as saying, and I haven't read this part yet, but Steven Stamkos, this is an actual quote, "I was in a jolly jumper." I can't wait to read that.
A jolly jumper, huh?
I don't know. What is a jolly jumper?
No idea.
I don't know. Got the profile in here on Matt Walker. Why don't we go through this here? We'll since I have it in front of me, I was actually thumbing through it, in my thinking tank a little while ago. Matt Walker, 2009-10 season highs, goals 1. He did it twice. The last time, March 12th at Washington, assists. Now, again, this is single game high, 1. He did that 3 times. So just by that, that doing simple math. Superstar, I was somewhere the other day where a woman had to do addition, by hand on a piece of paper, and she added up 36 plus 36. Now, what do you think that she came out with?
I'm going to say she came up with 62.
You're giving her the benefit of the doubt. She came up with 52.
Wow.
Which I was thrilled with because she was calculating what I owed.
That's great. Hey, that's a win.
It's a win for me. that's parking on Sunday night. Yeah, so in Matt Walker, 2009-10, with his first season with the Tampa Bay Lightning, 66 games, 2 goals, 3 assists for 5 points. He finished a minus 11. Now, earlier in the year, he was actually he actually led the the Tampa Bay Lightning in plus minus. Now let's see where he finished. Steve Downey led them all with plus 14. I mean, he's right there. I mean, a bunch of guys are minus 14, 11, minus 15, 13, 12, 8. So that's not bad, considering he was on the Tampa Bay Lightning. So that's not bad. 90 penalty minutes. No points or no goals anyway in the power play, shorthanded, game-winning, game-tying. He only had 54 shots in 66 games, and he averaged a little over 16 minutes a night. So that was, for those of you Matt Walker fans, that's what he was up to this year. He did lead the team in blocked shots with 116 in only 66 games, so that's good. Yeah, but that's your Matt Walker. You know, going back to the Red Wings, and I was, you know, if you remember that 2003 series with the Red Wings and that the Ducks' journey to the Stanley Cup, the Ducks set a record that year. I don't know if you know this or not, Superstar, but the Ducks set a record that still stands. I mean, they tied Montreal, the 1993 Montreal Canadiens, that won the Stanley Cup, but they tied that record of the best record in games decided by one goal in one Stanley Cup playoff. They were 12-1 that playoff in one goal games. 12-1 with J.S. Giguere leading the way. It's crazy.
That's amazing.
And the thing about that was, and the reason why I remembered this is because I also remember that Red Wings Duck series really well, because even though they swept, and I mentioned this, is I want to get back to it because I meant to mention this about that series. All 4 games in that Western Conference quarterfinal that year, Red Wings and Ducks, were decided by one goal. And if you remember, it was Steve Ruchin who ended the series.
I remember that, no.
You don't remember that?
No.
Oh, Teemu Selanne and Paul Kariya were on that team together. The great Steve Ruchin. Ducks were also perfect in OT that year, if I remember correctly. They had the perfect, I just remember that, it was the perfect playoff, and then they lost in the finals. Oh. All right, do you have anything you want to talk about, Superstar?
I do have a question for you.
Okay, good.
Now that you're probably not going to see most of the game live, are you excited about the Green Men?
No, because most people have no clue where the Green Men came from, and no one's teaching them, so it just annoys me.
I know where it comes from, and I happen to love that where it comes from, but...
Let's just... Superstar, for the people that don't know where the Green Men originated from, it's not something that some Vancouver Canuck fans dreamt up on their own. Where did it come from?
It came from probably the funniest TV show on right now. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Thursday nights on FX, I believe.
Who am I supposed to vote for? Am I supposed to vote for the Democrat who's going to blast me in the ass, or the Republican who's blasting my ass?
Politics is just all one big ass
it
blast.
You're going to get your ass blasted.
Nationwide
ass blast.
You know what?
Blast.
No more.
Exactly. Like a homosexual. I'm not gay.
Exactly. It was a part of the couple of their episodes where it originated from, Charlie Day, in the show, and now it's kind of become, anytime your team has the color green in its jersey, a cool thing to do is dress up as a Green Man. And you're right, 90% of the people who even do it have no idea where it comes from.
No, they just think it's the wacky guys down by the penalty box in Vancouver. It was so odd when it happened. I think it was in November. you know, working downtown. I left work at, I don't know, it was like probably like 5:30, 5:45 one day, and I'm walking down Wacker Drive, and there was a guy dressed up as the Green Man just high-fiving people. And I don't know what the reason for it was. I don't know if the Bulls were playing that night. He was on his way to try that gimmick at the Bulls game. I don't know. I don't remember. But, yeah, the green Man is everywhere.
It is. It is. And I hope that guy who does a handstand on the penalty box wall falls and breaks his neck.
I'm going to ask you this about it, going back to the Red Wings series superstar. Would you play the Chris Osgood card?
I don't know. I mean, obviously he's a guy who's been there. He's, you know, but I don't know if that's the Jimmy Howard's been your guy for a long time now. I don't know if I play that card.
The only reason why I ask you specifically in this series, you know, he hasn't been particularly great. I mean, at all, really, in the playoffs. I mean, he's been fine, but he hasn't been making – there's been times where you wish that he would have made a big save, and I think that if he would have made a couple in the opening round, the Red Wings wouldn't have gone seven games with the Coyotes. And if he makes a big one in that third period on last night, on Tuesday night at the Joe, then it's a 2-1 series, and we're not counting, you know, I mean, we're not counting the Red Wings out. But, I mean, I wouldn't. I think it's an interesting thing, but I wouldn't just because he is your goalie of the future now. He was so good, and I don't think, even if you, you know, even if you were Kreskin and you knew that you were going to lose game four and it was just going to be over, I still play him because I don't think you gain anything by sitting him down at this point. Just let him ride it out, have him, you know, have the experience, whatever happens the rest of the way. I mean, unless he really, you know, I mean, but, you know, they only got one more game to lose, so it doesn't matter. I just say let him ride it out, you know, earn the experience of this, and hopefully he comes back and he's just as good. And, you know, if you're a Red Wing fan and, even if you're a Blackhawks fan, because it's better for the Blackhawks that the Red Wings are good, you know. Because if you're a Blackhawks fan, you should demand that the Blackhawks are great. And if the Red Wings are at least good, that rivalry is great, you know. So, I mean, you can say all the things you want about the Red Wings, but the rivalry's no good if the Red Wings are no good. It might be fun to watch them struggle and lose and all that, but if they're not good, the rivalry doesn't jack, you know, it doesn't amount to much of anything, and it's no fun. I mean, ask a Red Wing fan about the last 10 years about playing the Blackhawks. It was no fun. But all right, tonight's game. Let's get into this. Things that you expect tonight in Game 3.
You know what? I'm going on a limb, and I really do expect it. I expect the Blackhawks to get out to a lead in this game.
Early or just at any point of the first period?
I think not ungodly early. Not 4 minutes into the game, but in the first 10.
One or two goals? You're going to be bold on me?
We'll go one.
You're not going to be the rest of these bloggers that you know, make predictions about seven-game series and then freak out when their team loses one or two games.
No.
Okay.
Exactly.
Oh, tell me exactly what you think is going to happen, Superstar.
I think the Hawks get out to a lead early, probably go into the first period, maybe tied at one, tied at two. I think it's a stalemate in the second. I think the Blackhawks actually come out on top of this one 4-2.
Okay. So same score as the other night.
Same score.
It's going to be interesting to see. I think from a Vancouver standpoint, now Ryan Johnson, for Blackhawks fans that don't remember Ryan Johnson, don't know, Ryan Johnson's probably the best one of, if not the best penalty killer in the game. He's been out for a while. Great shot blocker. Great enough that he broke his foot a few months back. He's ready to play. Actually, he could have played on Monday. Alain Vigneault chose not to change his lineup. I'd be almost, I wouldn't say shocked, but I would expect that he's got to get Ryan Johnson back into the game. And he's a great fourth line center, great penalty killer, heart and soul guy. Again, shot blocker. I don't see why he would hold Ryan Johnson out at this point. He's not going to play. You're not going to ask him to play so many minutes that fatigue will become a factor. And I believe that he's been ready actually since game one. He could have played in game one if it was actually do or die. If Saturday was a do or die game for Vancouver, he could have played in that. So he's probably been preparing, you know, with extra work on ice and off, you know, to get into shape, you know, for whenever he gets back in. I'd look for him to get back in tonight. And that would definitely make Vancouver a better team. Again, for the Blackhawks, I don't want Eager in the lineup after that stupid too many men gaffe in the third period on Monday night, but I expected he'd stay in. Brouwer goes out, Hendry's in, so you have six defensemen. Bufflin, of course, stays up at forward, probably on the Taves and Kane line. And there's things that I want to see. I want to see a great game out of Marian Hossa. I want to see the best game that Marian Hossa can bring tonight, because this could be tonight certainly isn't a must-win. I don't even think Monday night was a must-win from a Blackhawks standpoint. I just think that the team who wins this game is probably going to win this series. And for me, I want Duncan Keith, the supposed best defenseman in hockey, to start playing like the best defenseman in hockey. I need Marian Hossa to start playing like a $7.9 million player. And Seabrook's got to be what he was the other night. I want to see less of Eager and Burrish, but, you know, whatever they are bringing, you know, concise and, you know, impact shifts. And Andrew Ladd needs to – I'm waiting for the game that Andrew Ladd breaks out and, you know, has two big goals. He was running around the ice quite a bit on Monday night. I saw him, you know, have probably his best game of the playoffs so far, aside from, I believe – maybe game six in the Nashville series, but to me, those are the guys to really watch out for. Kane, this is Patrick Kane's return, Chris Versteeg and John Madden's return to Vancouver.
So no.
They're sure to hear a lot about that, but, you know, I'd be really impressed with Patrick Kane if he came out tonight and really shoved it down the Vancouver Canucks' throats. And I kind of look for all, you know, I look for all those things to happen, and I think it's not going to be a blowout. It's going to be a back and forth game. I think this is probably the game that Blackhawks fans are already kind of itchy about Antti Niemi. I think this is the game that they get real itchy, and that he's going to give up some goals that, you know, will make you throw things at your television. But the Blackhawks are still going to win this game, and I think they're going to win it 5-4. And they may need overtime to do it, but that's the way I look at it. I look at a bunch of lead changes back and forth. An amazing hockey game I'm expecting tonight. Lots of different goal scorers, but 5-4 Blackhawks, and just a terrific hockey game.
I've definitely have been looking forward to this one for a while.
Another thing I want to bring up, since I didn't go to the game on Monday night. I actually didn't think I was going to be able to, so I put my tickets up, and then I sold them to the forklift over there at thehockeynight.com, because I figured, like, if I could get forklift in my seats, like, he'd see the game at a perspective where he'd actually be able to intelligently speak about the Blackhawks on his podcast.
Yeah, I think that didn't happen.
Well, they haven't had a podcast yet, so we're going to have to wait and see. But And I sold them to him. I mean, I really jacked up the price and sold it to him at a premium as well.
Well, why wouldn't you not?
Because he's always asking me to buy stuff from him and contribute to causes and his stupid beer-a-thon. I mean, stupid. I mean, it's his beer-a-thon for the charity is a good idea. It's a great idea. I'm not saying, but I hate playoff beards. We've talked about this on the show. I hate them. It's so stupid.
You know, you got to watch out. Next time you need a new hockey night thong, that price is getting jacked sky high.
I gave Forklift some ideas for merchandise that he can hawk on the Hockey Night merch store. So hopefully he takes advantage of those because I think they're great ideas. But what was I talking about?
The Monday night you didn't go. You couldn't.
Oh yeah. So as it turned out, I could have gone. And I actually had tickets offered to me during the day, but I chose to, spend the evening. I actually took in the first period. I can't even talk tonight. First period at a bar, and then back at Casa de Bloc with a nice little crowd. And during the third period, now Pat Foley does a great job doing what Pat Foley should do, which is pump up the Blackhawks and you know, he's sort of in the Harry Carey role now. But, I don't know, you've probably heard this superstar, where he's rolling off how Antti Niemi has this knack for following up a bad performance with a good performance.
Correct.
Okay. It was absurd to me, because someone fed Pat Foley these stats. And before they fed him these stats, they should have understood, or a light should have clicked on to how ridiculous this was going to sound. Antti Niemi played a half a season in the NHL so far, right?
Correct.
Okay. Pat Foley ran off a string of 8 or 9. I don't know what the official count is, and I didn't have time to go back and but he ran off 8 or 9 twosomes of games that Antti Niemi played badly in, and then he came back the next night and he played good. Okay, well, what Niemi's played off the top of my head, let's just say he's played 45 games, 46 games, whatever it is. You know, and what, 8, 9, 10 of them were bad, and then he followed them up with a good, you know, performance. So he's just like average. He's bad, and then he's good. So he's average. So in a 7-game series, you've got to hope that he's good. You know, you're on the right side of good. Because he's going to be bad at least 3 times and maybe 4 in 7 games. It just seems so absurd to me because Pat Foley's like, he's like on such a game, he gave up 4 goals. The next game back, he gives up 2 and 1, you know, and he's doing the Pat Foley thing. And it went on for like a minute that he's running these things off. And I'm like, Pat, I mean, don't you understand that you're mentioning all these games in which this you know, the finish, whatever they're calling them, was bad? That's a lot of bad. And if you know, it's revisionist history to a certain extent because some of them that he was labeling, it wasn't like he came right back the next game and played. It was, I mean, there was a gap that Huey played. So, I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, is you know, his point is that he rebounds nicely, but
he has to rebound too much.
Exactly. That's
he gives up too many rebounds, and he has to rebound too much.
Exactly.
Again, I think Niemi played great on Monday. I think if you're giving away stars, it should have been Niemi, Luongo, Seabrook. Versteeg didn't deserve a star. I thought Niemi played very, very well on Monday. Saturday, not so hot. Monday, I thought he played very well. He made some big saves, and he was a big part of the reason why they won that game, and it was tied so late. But you've got to be smarter than that, Pat, or whoever's feeding them those lines. It's like, it just, for a rookie that didn't even get the job till, you know, the last 3 weeks of the season, like, definitively it became his job. It's like, I mean, how come he's had all these bad games? How is he any good if he's had all these bad games he's had to rebound from? Now, if you were talking about Martin Brodeur, and he had all those, you know, but Martin Brodeur plays 70, you know, 65, 70 games a year.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, like we said, it's a great point that he's able to come back and rebound. But when you have to rebound that many times, you have a bad problem.
Another thing that has to happen good for the Blackhawks tonight is, you know, there's kind of a I dislike the face-off obsession that people have sometimes, just because it's such a crapshoot, and it really is. Face-offs are won not only by the guy in the face-off circle, but a lot of the times his two wingers, or if it's four-on-four, is one winger coming in. It's like my biggest pet peeve with the people that I play with is the fact that they're all backed off like 20 feet away from me. And not only do I have to win it initially, but then I got to win it again just to get it back to the point or somebody that, you know, it's more of a team stat than it is anything else, and it's such a crapshoot. You know, but in game one, the Blackhawks 55%, the Vancouver's 45%. And again, it essentially means nothing. It's when do you win them, where do you win them? Well, Blackhawks get the better of the faceoffs, and of course they lose the game 5-1. Game two, Blackhawks win 43% of the draws. Vancouver 57%, Blackhawks win 4-2. So I don't, you know, but I will say this. Down the stretch on Monday night, here's another thing that the Blackhawks were fortunate about. Vancouver was winning all the draws late in the third period, all of them. So that's another thing that does need to change tonight. I mean, they've got to win big draws, and they've got to win them in good situations.
Agreed. I mean, I don't know. I'm pretty sure that you paid attention to the Pittsburgh highlights from last night. Pittsburgh dominated that faceoff circle. And I think it does make a big difference as far as winning and losing faceoffs. But I think even more so, like you hit on, it's not the overall percentage of the game. It's when and where. You win a clean faceoff to start a power play, how much different does that power play look right away opposed to losing that draw?
Well, the good thing for the Blackhawks is the guys that are taking the faceoffs and the power play, for the most part, I mean, it's Taves, and Taves has been lights out in this series, in the faceoff circle. I mean, you can't get much better than what Taves is doing in this series. The guys that are bringing the average down, overall the team average down, two guys that have been horrible, John Madden and Dave Bolin. And, of course, Dave Bolin, this is another thing I freaked out about in the Committed Indian the other night. We talked about it last week. It's like, who are you going to match up against the Sedin line? At the time when it was, you know, and they still are together. I mean, game one, Quenneville went crazy in the second half of the game and just put any kind of trio that he could think of together. But, you know, Sharp and Hossa are playing together, and that's the line that should be up against the Sedin line, because Patrick Sharp usually is very good on the draw, and that's the first way to you know, combat the Sedin line is to get the puck away from him. And Dave Bolin's out there losing draw after draw after draw after draw, and Quenneville keeps putting him out there against the Sedin line. That's an interesting thing to look for tonight. Instead of, you know, one of the things that's going to happen tonight, and why the Blackhawks have to dress Jordan Hendry, is because, not that that's a bad thing, he's just going to be on the third unit with Brent Sopel, and that unit's not going to see a lot of time tonight, because Joel Quenneville's got to guess at when Alain Vigneault is going to throw out the Sedins. So Seabrook and Keith are going to be jumping over the boards a ton. And that's another thing, when you talk about bad line changes and too many men on the ice, the Blackhawks have to be very focused on that. They have to be very particular and detail-oriented about jumping over the boards, who you coming over the boards for, and if you call someone off, you got to get off. No doubting, no, you know, you call someone off, get off. Don't look back at the play, nothing. When you make the decision to come off, and the bench has got to be aiding these guys too, because that's the game that's going to be played tonight. Quenneville's going to be throwing Keith and Seabrook out there at every attempt. They're going to get a ton of ice time. And, you know, of the defensemen, I don't know if you saw this or not, but of the defensemen, we saw a lot of them on Monday night. Halmerson had the most ice time of the Blackhawks defensemen.
And I thought he played great.
He did. He played great. You know, I think he finished with a minus one, but he's out there in a lot of different situations playing very, very well. You know, at times with a few different people because the Blackhawks were only having five defensemen. But tonight they'll have six, and, you know, Keith and Seabrook are going to be out there a lot. They're going to get out there, and then all of a sudden Quenneville's going to want to get them off. This is another thing that's going to lead to a lot of odd number chances, bad changes, long shifts with you know, Keith and Seabrook getting out there and then getting stuck or staying long to play against the Sedin line. A lot of those intricacies of what you're going to see tonight are going to be very important and are going to decide the game. You know, again, I mean, this game to a certain extent is in Joel Quenneville's hands and how he and Torchetti and Mike Havlin deal with these line changes and these matchups and you know, how intent are they? I mean, in my view, I think the Blackhawks are the better team. And four lines against Vancouver's four lines, I don't think they have to worry too much about matchups. If there's a face-off in a certain zone, you know, I want my best face-off man. I want my best, you know, my best defensive unit out there. So that means I want that Sharp and Hossa tandem out there. I want Taves out there taking draws. I want to see less of Bolin and Versteeg. Everyone should want to see less of those two. But I want to see more of Andrew Ladd. I hope that Andrew Ladd gets some time up on the top two lines. And, you know, Quenneville's very particular about where he puts the Bolin in the Madden line. But, again, I say 5-4. I say it's going to be an incredible game. And we will talk to you at some point here in the near future.
Yeah, we'll have to find a good day that works for everyone, and I don't know what, maybe even a Friday pregame or.
I was thinking Saturday. What do you think about Saturday?
I don't see a problem with it right now.
All right, well, you think about it, and you let me know, and I'll schedule it later on after I get back from hockey. TheThirdManIn.com is back up and running after a very, very long night for me. Some technical difficulties at thethirdman.com yesterday, and we were down for a very long time, but we're back up now. Everything should be fine. I think someone doesn't like Rich Lindblom and his very fine man Rich is, but someone doesn't like his thoughts because I tried to put Rich's latest, and I have another one to put up, actually. I don't think I'm going to have time before I got to leave here in a minute, but I tried to put something up for Rich's, and like 10 minutes later, thethirdmanin.com was no more. So it's all back up and running now. Everything should look as it was. But, yeah, that took me till about 8 o'clock this morning. But, all right, so, yeah, probably Saturday sometime, and we'll be talking about games 3 and 4 out in Vancouver. Hopefully we won't get too drunk on Friday night. We'll be able to talk about it intelligently.
Let's just hope on that one.
Or we could do it Friday night from, wherever.
Like they say, hope in one hand, shit in the other. See which one fills up first.
People want us to do remotes.
No, nobody wants us to do remotes after last week.
All right, superstar, I got to get out of here. It's been a pleasure. Enjoy the game tonight, and we'll talk to you.
Yeah, say hi to the boys. We'll talk to you Saturday.
All right. I guess that's it. We'll talk to you on Saturday for thethirdmanin.com. Chris Block and the Superstar. Good night, everybody.